The Venturi's Voice podcast brings together some of technology's brightest minds to discuss all things leadership, technology, and staffing. Keep the conversation going in the Venturi's Voice Slack group and have the opportunity to meet some of our amazing guests. You can download Venturi's Voice via iTunes or via the Venturi Group website at venturi-group.com. Today's guest is Andrew Stevenson, Director of Big Data and Analytics at Atos. I thought it might be kind of appropriate place to start is actually where we're at now. And, you know, you've obviously had, you know, a fantastic career and you're in a position of leadership now. And for me, I'm really curious about that role in itself, really, because when it comes to data now, I think it's a little bit of a minefield and there needs to be, you know, a lot of strategic alignment. And I think the role, you know, we've had a few people like CDOs and stuff on the show. I think that kind of high level leadership in, you know, a variety of data roles is so, so important. And I feel really passionately that it needs to be consistent. But one thing I wanted to actually just start off by asking your opinion on was, you know, do we need to keep it to kind of just a CDO, or do we need to filter the leadership roles because data is so broad to where it kind of needs its own leadership within, you know, the various aspects of data?
It's a very good question, and I hate the term CDO, actually. For me, data shouldn't be something that's done on its own. It really should be part of the whole business. And I really get frustrated when CXOs and, you know, CEOs come to me and say, "Oh, well, we're okay with data. We've just hired 50 data scientists," and they don't really get it that actually the use of insight and advanced analytics should be really embedded in everything they do. It's not just down to one person or one group. It's got to be, you know, right at the heart of the business. And that really frustrates me when they don't get that and they spend a fortune on big data and visualizations and sexy graphics in the boardroom, but don't actually get the value from it by changing what they're doing and changing their decision-making processes. They just do the same things with fancier graphs.
Yeah. Agreed. I think the point that has been made to me several times is, you know, you have to kind of culturally embed data into your program, into your kind of culture corporately. And I buy into that, right? I mean, I kind of get it conceptually, but practically speaking, you know, it can't be easy. And especially when you're dealing with, you know, companies, I think obviously startups have an advantage because they kind of start off that way, right? You know, but obviously we're talking about, you know, the type of companies that most people in this country will work for is larger companies. You know, and how do you approach that? And, you know, it's an interesting one because, yeah, everyone's kind of aware that we need to do it now, but inevitability of how quickly data practices are changing. By the time we have it embedded culturally, things have already changed again. So it seems like we're always trying to catch up. There's always going to be a lag there. Do you think that, you know, we will catch up from a macro perspective?
Yeah, I think if businesses start looking at it not from the technology point of view, but from the business point of view, and that might be, you know, an interesting thing to go back to because, you know, coming from a technology company, I don't talk technology, I'm talking business all the time, then it's really about how we use the different technologies. And rather than being driven by the technology, we're being driven by what the business needs. And that really is changing. Is when we get that through to some of our clients, that really gets them to be ahead of the curve rather than behind it. So they're pulling through what's the most appropriate tools or techniques and just using them in, you know, 3 to 6 months, and then going and looking at the next thing. So they're not wed to one particular thing, and that means that they can stay ahead of things. And it's often the case that it's the culture and the people that actually stop the value from being delivered. I remember we did a project for one supermarket, and, you know, they said, we need you to help us reduce our waste. And we said, well, obviously your forecast is wrong if you've got a lot of waste. And they said, no. You know, we've spent 4 to 5 years with a team of 40 people building a great forecasting system that looks at all of our data and gives us a forecast. So we said, well, that can't be very accurate then if you've got waste. And it sort of slowly started dawning on them. And when we looked at it and started looking outside of the business at other data sources, as well as just the internal ones that look backwards, our forecast was 8% more accurate than theirs was. And that reduced their wastage by 98%. And they then came to us and said, well, yeah, but what are we going to do with those 40 people that have been building that model for 4 years? You know, that's quite an expense. We don't know what to do with them. We'll come back to you. And so it really is frustrating when you get that it's the people and organization and cultural things that actually stop businesses from moving forwards. And that's where those startups can be really, I suppose, faster, because they are startups and you don't have that degree of organizational and huge overhead of people that you get in some of the more traditional companies.
Yeah. I think, like I say, it is like a cultural infrastructure issue that I think a lot of these kind of data professionals have. And I think that's why, you know, this kind of CDO, whatever, you know, whether we like it or not, I think has kind of developed so much momentum, because I think people just kind of want a voice and want some kind of high level direction from, you know, all the data activities and how we should implement it across, you know, the C level. Because I think, you know, it's obviously necessary and massively important. And, you know, you need someone senior who's going to be able to manage the data program. But I think the main purpose of those kind of roles is how, you know, how we integrate it with all the other aspects of the company's operations. And I think that's, you know, something that I'm sure, you know, you have to face, you know, which is part of the difficulty as well, because it's, you know, you're kind of the team that's impacts everything, really, every aspect of the team. So that's, I'm sure, is one of the bigger challenges. And I wanted to ask as well, like, you know, when, I mean, it should have really always been a problem, I suppose, but it seems to me from an outside perspective that it's really built momentum, this issue has built momentum relatively recently. When did you feel that it was kind of necessary to start doing more collaboration across the board and really start to look at, you know, the internal infrastructure and how we're adopting data and, you know, it becoming like a cultural issue? What was the kind of point or year approximately that you started feeling that tension?
I don't think I've ever not felt it. Is the issue, and I've been doing this since 1992. So I've always felt that there is that tension. There's the need for the IT team, who are almost like acting as the librarians of the data, to actually work together with the business, who are the users of the library and actually the ones who are generating the value. I think a lot of our, I would say, colleagues in the industry, the software vendors and things, have really not been helpful by promoting proof of values, proof of concept, short-termism to the lines of business, and allowing the lines of business, you know, the marketing departments, etc., to go off and do things very easily, either in the cloud or on laptops, and turning something that is of high potential quickly into something that becomes critical, but then not working with the IT teams to actually have a degree of guidance and process in place to allow that to be industrialized quickly. So the line of business can see there's value and has proven there's value there, but then can't deliver it on an industrialized scale. And that's quite often what we see. You know, we get calls from CIOs and CTOs who say, I've got this rogue department that's sort of running servers underneath desks. Can you come and help me? Because you've got all of the security implications you've got of the data. And so it's something that we're passionate about, is actually helping the lines of business deliver quickly in no more than 3 months, but actually at the same time working with the IT departments to make sure that the critical infrastructure is in place to take the outputs of those POVs and industrialize them.
Yeah, I think some of the challenges as well that I've seen as well, and I see this specifically, well, I suppose it's more obvious in the security space, is around this kind of education piece about how we're educating people on data. And I think it's subsequent of how quickly it's built up momentum. Mm-hmm. But do you think, where does the responsibility lie, in your opinion, for those kind of other departments and such to educate themselves on, or be educated by the data team to sufficiently enough to where, you know, they have a good enough understanding, and maybe that'll help with things like integration? Because I suppose, you know, everyone has a fundamental understanding of sales and marketing, right? I mean, most people know what sales guys are there to do, for instance, yeah. But from a data perspective, you know, maybe some people aren't fully clear on what the kind of core principles and responsibilities are of that team. Do you think that, like, beyond all that, that is actually some of the core issues there? It's just the lack of understanding and education on the
well, that's part of it, but I think there's some fundamentals that as an industry, across all the different market sectors, there's far too little common sense actually applied within business now. It's about a lot of people are reliant on computing technology and the numbers that come out of on screen, and they don't actually eyeball the numbers and actually say, does that make sense? Am I expecting that to be like that? You know, if I think about it, would that make sense? And I see far too many people relying on numbers and not looking at where those numbers are coming from. So understanding the data and understanding where data is created, how it's created, and whereabouts in the process it comes from. You know, we even get people who don't understand the difference between a cause and an effect, or an input and an output, and they just throw data into some of these tools that very easily create models, and they get an answer out, you know, the answer to the universe of 42, and they just then go off blindly and say, well, this is what we should be doing, rather than actually following through. What's an input? What's an output? Where does this data come from? What's a lever that I can pull, and what can I do about it? And actually, what does it mean as the answer? So I think it's in all our interests, it's all part of our job to actually make models more intelligent. The models are, you know, artificial intelligence is a term I hate. machine learning is a bit better because it's learning about things, but it really is in all our interests to help these models become more and more intelligent and to take away some of the bias. If we only feed a model with good data, it will never know what the bad is. So you know, a number of things there. And yeah, it's a bit like the year 2000 and Y2K, when everyone was supposed to learn about that. Or I remember being KPMG and we all got taught Internet 101, the basics of internet. And I think it is really about learning some basics of data. I think it's one of the things I've got from in my career is that I started life as an electronics engineer. An electrical engineer, and so having a great foundation in data and computing and machine code and A to D converters and things has actually given me an understanding of what these things do and why they do it and what they mean and the difference between black and white. It was always described to be one of my bosses when I was running the data warehousing practice that I was one of few data engineers that she knew that could tell the difference between the sort of the black and the white of data, and that there should be shades of grey in it. And yeah, it's, I think, on everyone, and it should be part of the curriculum more. And we make it too easy for youngsters these days in terms of apps. They don't actually understand the data behind the app. It's more about the front end, the interface, and less about the data that's behind it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, really important.
Long answer to your question, but yeah.
No, I think it was really well put. I think that... You raise, you know, there's a lot to go at, I suppose, there. But, you know, I think one way I'd like to maybe approach it as well is to maybe put that into context in some real terms is about your experiences just to look back through the career and the assumptions that and the questions that you've been asked consistently that, you know, probably have baffled you in some ways about what people can have expected from you and from your team. And, you know, that I think it'd be interesting to kind of see if you have any of those questions that may have been consistent. You know, to try and put a few things into context there with just where we are, where we've been up to along that timeline.
Yeah, I think... There's always been a lot of, well, we've always done it this way. Why are you challenging it? It's about, it isn't broken yet. So why do you need to fix it? Because I do tend to come as an engineer with a view of, well, why is it done that way? I always like to break things down. I was one of the kids that, you know, if you were given a new toy or something, you'd have it in pieces with all the screws out, working out how it worked and then work out how to put it back together. And, well, if it worked and there were half a dozen screws left over, then they weren't necessary. So why were they there to start off with type? So it's the challenge of, can I do it better? Can I make it work as well with less pieces, with less complexity? And... It's one of the things I've seen, particularly in the last few years, working heavily with a German company, as to over-engineering things. So not being content with getting something that's 80% good enough, that meets the needs and it's good enough to do the job. It has to be engineered to the nth degree, the 100% or more, so that it really is over-engineered and overpriced and doesn't it's taken far too long to actually get there. And it's one of the key differences I think I've seen between European and American businesses is that the Americans will have the idea and almost immediately have the sales and PowerPoints created and then be doing the engineering behind it. You know, ask Elon Musk about that because that's exactly what he does with the Tesla car is come up with the great idea, sell it, even get the deposits and then work out how he's going to make it and do the delivery. Whereas in Europe, it's very much more, we'll over-engineer the product, we'll build it, and then we'll advertise it and hope people come. And I think that that's something that we need to sort of get the fine balance between.
Yeah, I think so. Do you think that, again, that is specifically like a European problem, just to cover that point in a little bit more detail?
I think it's, yeah, I think that there are, it's a European versus America. It's a big corporation versus smaller private corporate, you know, owned business where the control is. But yeah, it does tend to be, as I've seen, Europe v America.
Yeah, and do you think that we're kind of guilty of like tighter regulation, and that's part of it? Does that ever come into practice with some of the kind of data principles and the ways that you want to mine data and things like that?
No, I don't see that so much. And I, you know, the data protection I see as absolutely critical and necessary. So I don't see that it's the regulations. I see it's more the way that we actually place a value on the data. I really don't think that businesses place a value on the information that they store. They don't treat it in the same way as their physical assets. So, you know, you get businesses spending a huge amount on physical security of buildings and desks and looking after things and almost nothing at all on protecting the data. But it's actually a lot easier to recreate an office and rebuild an office or a factory or something than it is to recreate a customer database.
It's it's been, I'm sure it's been a fascinating kind of journey, or throughout your career. And I think it's easy to see why data's kept you engaged, because I mean, what's going on in the space is fascinating within itself. But if people were trying to emulate your career, looked up to your experiences and thought, I want to progress and get to the top level. What are some of the attributes now, and especially to into today, that you really need in order to become kind of senior? Because, just for an example, I think you have to be creative in a lot of ways, to become senior in data, and I think that's a massively underrated attribute. But if you were to look at it from your perspective, and obviously it's always quite difficult, I suppose, we're very stiff upper lip, aren't we, as Brits? But what would you say that your kind of advice would be for people?
I suppose one of the key pieces of advice I'd give is going back to that common sense approach and applying some common sense, applying the human eyeball to the data and actually being able to then tell a story about it. So, you know, the great thing I have with Atos at the moment is my title of chief storyteller for Atos. And it's all about telling stories of how we help our clients become more and more successful. But it's also about telling stories about how the client can use their data. And that's what's key. I think I read about people that were actually companies that were actually employing journalists to help the data scientists tell the story about the models and the results that they were getting, because the data scientists were great at coming up with the statistics and the model, but then couldn't explain what it did and why it was important. And that's what I think, if you want to get on and become successful and senior in this whole information area or digital transformation, then actually being able to understand the basics and then tell a story about it. I'm not deeply technical. You know, I'm an engineer, so I understand some fundamentals, but I would struggle to give you a definition of a Hadoop system or architect a data lake. That's what I employ architects for. But I can give them a view as to why I need it and what's the business benefit of us investing in it. And that's the type of story that I think you need to be able to tell.
I love it. Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth in that. And I think it's a role as well that I think will evolve as well moving forward. So do you think that the consistent effort to learn is kind of a great prerequisite as well? And, you know, on top of that, is there a particular direction that you think the role is going to go down in kind of the coming years?
I think you've got to use your eyes and ears and mouth in the ratio that God gave them to you. So actually listen and read and keep an eye open and look at patterns, look at numbers, have an interest in numbers and data, but also have an interest in what's going on around you. And take examples from one industry and cross them over and cross-fertilize them into somewhere else. I really hate it when I hear that software companies or services companies are walking into a business and saying, this is what we've done for another business. Here's the model. You can use it. It will help you deliver this cost savings or this revenue for your business. It won't work. It's more about, you know, so if you were a CXO and someone came to you and said, well, I've done this for your competitor, I can do it for you, you're going to think, well, how's it going to differentiate me? So I really think it's about being able to use models, accelerators, thinking about the experiences that you've had and then applying those in innovative and fast ways to help others. It's not about just develop once, sell many. So it really is that experiential model. And that's really difficult to do for new people straight out of university, you know, the new data scientists, the new data engineers. So for those sorts of people, I really would say, you know, just keep your eyes open, use as much time as you can to learn what's going on across your own industry, in other industries, and then look at ways that you could apply it.
I think it's great advice, Andrew. Really good advice. I think, you know, there probably is going to be some interesting principles on hiring and how we're bringing on this kind of new set of data engineers, because, like you say, I'm sure the principles and the concepts that they're learning are probably different than the way you may have learned them. And, you know, the skill set that they have is kind of subject to change as well. So there's that, you know, like, again, it's makes things extremely difficult. So it really all boils down to, yeah, you need the talent, I suppose. But on top of that, I think the attitude towards just learning and the willingness to do so is absolutely paramount. Now, don't get me wrong, from a hiring perspective, that's incredibly difficult to identify. But nonetheless, I think that's kind of inevitably the way things are going. You can't just look at a checklist anymore of technologies that they can work with.
No, it's also it really is that attitude or that enthusiasm, and the behavioural parts that I find are more important than the deep technical. You know, you can train people on those. Almost anyone can learn about some things, and some of the tools are so simple to use. It really is about that enthusiasm and attitude to want to see things differently and not just be a yes person and follower.
Agreed, Andrew. I believe it or not, we're already at 30 minutes, so I don't want to it went ridiculously quickly. I wish I could keep you for another hour, to be fair, but we'll leave it here for now. Hopefully we can maybe pick back up and continue the conversation down the road. But I just wanted to say thank you so much for kind of sharing your opinion. I thought you made some tremendous points, and I think it's really kind of invaluable advice for anyone in the data space, or anyone, I suppose, looking to collaborate more with data, to kind of pay attention to some of the notes that you hit today. So yeah, really appreciate the time. Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.